local information for the greater Hickory Metro. It's First Talk with Hal Rowe, 1290 AM and 102.3 FM.
First Talk with Hal Rowe, WHKY Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to First Talk with Hal Rowe on WHKY Talk Radio for the Greater Hickory Metro. It's National Dyslexia Awareness Month in our country. But also, with so many different things happening now in education, children being at home, learning differences, it's very important that maybe parents who are spending more time possibly with their children at home are able to key in on some of these differences and to find out that they really do have a super intelligent, wonderful child at home who may be just having some learning differences. So we're going to give you a chance to get in their corner this morning with Angela Lawrence. She's the executive director of the Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center. Good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Also, a retired educator, Reba Walden, joins us this morning, and she helps with professional development, helping teachers learn how to teach with students with learning differences. Ms. Walden, nice to have you with us.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
I spent the time before we came on the air talking about myself because I'm dyslexic, and I wanted to we kind of did that, but I want to find out a little bit about who I'm talking with this morning. So Ms. Lawrence, tell me a little bit about yourself and your involvement with the Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center. Tell us about you.
I'm the executive director, and I like to introduce myself as the executive director of the nonprofit with the biggest identity crisis in Catawba County.
Okay.
Because so many people, when they hear Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center, they assume that we're the library.
Right.
We're actually not the library. We are a small nonprofit that helps children who are struggling readers. We try to empower struggling readers, equip their teachers so that they know the best method to help these students along and encourage their parents.
Very good. How about you, Ms. Walden? Tell me a little bit about you, retired educator.
Yes, I've been in education for over 40 years, and I was intrigued by, when I went to college, I was intrigued by children who struggled with reading. So that's been my path through all of my education, is helping teachers or helping students learn to be better readers. So
very good.
Even now as a retired educator, I still work with students who struggle and also with helping teachers learn how to work with students who struggle with reading.
I think it's very interesting because I went through some of that as a young person. I had a time when in school that was set aside for me to go to. I can't remember, they called it lab. I can't remember exactly what they called it, but we'll talk maybe a little bit about that on the air. And I think that to move ahead, let's kind of define dyslexia if we could, because that's one of the things that people, if you say you're dyslexic, they say, oh, you reverse your letters, and there's a lot more going on than that. So if we could, Ms. Lawrence, should we start with you? Let's kind of understand what dyslexia is, because it's a lot more than just that.
Right. I don't know how many times before I took this job I would reverse a number and say, oh, I must be dyslexic, and not have any idea really what I was saying and what that really meant. But really, dyslexia are problems with decoding. So problems in reading with decoding, where you actually get down and sound out the words, okay? So they have a poor sound letter correspondence. So if they see the letter T, for most of us, that's automatic that it says T.
Right.
But the dyslexic student has a lot more trouble bringing up that sound letter correspondence.
Huh.
It's often associated with poor spelling.
Okay.
It can affect their reading fluency. And then if you can't read fast enough, it's just like when you're riding a bicycle. If you can't pedal fast enough, eventually you're going to fall off. And so that's if students can't read fast enough, they can't get to the end of the sentence or the end of the paragraph or the end of the essay and really have good comprehension.
Gotcha. So parents may look at this and say, you're not paying attention, or you're taking a look at this sentence. We've already, you know, read this three times. Well, they've got the sentence memorized. They know what's going on there maybe, but they're having a difficult time decoding. That's a great way to put it, because I don't know that I've ever heard that before, but that really does make perfect sense. So Ms. Walden, tell me a little bit about, in the education part of this, Where can parents recognize this and key on this and start to say, okay, this is a sign or this is a signal that this problem is happening and this is what's going on? What do they see at home, or what do teachers see that gives them the idea of, oh, maybe we have some differences here?
Well, of course, diagnosing it or figuring out early on is better, so preventing the issues of being frustrated.
Okay.
But when children are late in speaking or they get their syllables mixed up, like they say paschetti instead
right.
of spaghetti,
right.
some issues like that for speaking. They may have difficulty memorizing the letters of the alphabet or getting numbers and or letters out of sequence when
okay.
they're saying them or seeing them, or having difficulty attaching, as Angela said, the sound with the symbol and getting the symbols in order. So when great difficulty in spelling, as Angela said, but all of those issues kind of are a sign, and I think parents are their children's first teacher, so they really do kind of have a sense that they're not progressing or learning as they expect. But when children say, I don't want to read, or I don't like reading, that's kind of a sign too that you don't want to do something that's not fun or not easy for you.
Right, exactly. That's one of the things, and I was one of those kids that I did not like reading at all. I love being read too. I love stories. I could tell you a great story, you know, and make up just wonderful things, and people are just like, "Wow, I didn't know that." You know, I didn't know you were an astronaut at age, you know, four or whatever. But I could do those things. But actually, sitting down and reading, that was very, very difficult. And this is one of the things too. If your child is, and this is one of the things that I hope that you all we want to talk about this morning. If your child is having some difficulty reading, and maybe they're not associating, then some people they maybe worry about their child, and they say, "Oh no, my child is doomed to a life of not being able." A lot of people are dyslexic. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, they talked about Kennedy and Churchill and great leaders like this, and people who maybe just had some difficulties, but still went on to achieve great things. And that's part of what we want to talk about this morning, isn't it, Ms. Lawrence?
Yes. So it's estimated that anywhere from 5 to 20% of the population is dyslexic.
Okay.
And so that is, you know, a rather wide number, but there are so many successful people who have had dyslexia. Albert Einstein.
Right. Heard that.
Charles Schwab. Thomas Edison was once sent home with a note on his shirt, or, you know, sent home with a note that said, "He's too stupid to learn."
Wow.
The greatest inventor of all time.
See, there you go. That's just one example. Tell you what, we want to talk more about dyslexia when we return. We're talking with the experts this morning from the Patrick Deaver Learning Resource Center. We're talking with Angela Lawrence and Reba Walden. We're First Talk right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to First Talk with Hal Rowe on WHKY Talk Radio for the Greater Hickory Metro. I always say we ought to air the breaks. Everything that we just talked about in the room during the break, we really like to get out on the air. One thing before we move on and talk a little bit more about how parents can help, and that's what it really does. It takes a teacher, it takes parents to kind of get in there and champion those who may have some learning differences. Angela Lawrence, I want to ask you, because we'll start this part of the conversation kind of here. When someone is dyslexic, they have a different way of reading, and there's actually a science to reading. I did find out this just on my own research, is that we are not really, that's not a natural act of human beings. We're supposed to run and breathe and eat and things like this, and these all come naturally to us and instinctually to us. Reading is not. So there are different ways of reading. You were telling me about the talk of the reading wars and actually instructing people how to read differently from a scientific approach. But you also were telling me that the brain lights up in a different way under an MRI when you're talking with someone who's reading as a dyslexic or someone who has a dyslexia as someone who does not.
Right. So functional MRIs are wonderful things, and they have shown us so much that we can learn about the dyslexic brain. And what really happens in dyslexia is that reading is processed in a different part of your brain. And so the fMRI scans can show the lighting up in different parts of the brain. And that's not the most efficient place to read. It's not where our natural readers read.
Right.
And so what, and you can see this in the work of the Shaywitzes, and Reba, remind me of the guy in France.
Stanislaus.
Dahan. You can go ahead and you can look those up on YouTube and see the actual thing. But what structured literacy or the Orton-Gillingham approach, the materials that we use with the students that we work with, actually does is help those. It rewires the brain.
Right.
We teach students how, through a multisensory structured approach, how to read, and that actually increases those neural connections and pathways so that that reading takes place in the most effective and efficient part of the brain.
And that's what we want to do in not just this education, but for every reader, is we want to be the very best reading possible. And Ms. Walden, that's one of the things that we were talking about during the break, is that there has been discussion on the science and the actual application of how we teach people to read. And that discussion still goes on today, right?
Yes, it still does. Yes.
And tell me a little bit about it in a general, because we could spend a couple hours, I'm sure, on this, but just in a general way that you would like to be able to have educators understand the best practices in reading, teaching, and instruction for reading. Tell me a little bit in a general way what that looks like.
Well, we encourage teachers to learn how to teach children in a very systematic, explicit way, and using a multisensory approach, just like you said, being able to see it visually, auditory, hear it, kinesthetically through our muscles and movement, and tactile through feeling it. So if we teach our English language in a very systematic, sequential way,
right,
and give children the opportunity to see it, say it, do it, practice it, then they can learn about reading and, as Angela said, rewire it. Instead of being inefficient with our reading skills, you are more proficient and can be a good reader.
And would you like to see this for every reader coming along?
Oh, we would. It would help all children. I learned to read before I went to school, so that's why I was so intrigued by the children who do struggle with reading.
Right.
So it would help all children be successful and not have frustration in whatever they chose to do in their life.
I do want to talk about the Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center this morning. Ms. Lawrence, during the break, you said everything that you do really supports the school system, because we all understand, I think, that anybody who knows anything about, we just have Beverly Snowden on, we get a curriculum that comes down from the state, sometimes part of it from the federal government. I never thought, I don't want to get into that. I'll tell you during the break about that. But, if you spend a dollar on the pizza, you don't get to choose the toppings. That I always said about the federal programs coming in. But if you have a curriculum that comes down from the state that has to be administered by the local school boards and schools, that has to be, we have testing in different levels and different grades. So these children have to be able to perform on that level and to be able to have that knowledge and that understanding. We don't want to say teachers teach to the test. We know that they try not to do that. They try to be expansive as possible. But yet your organization wants to support those educators and help those children, because let's face it, we all are going to deal on that plane at one point or another. We're all going to have to be able to read, to know our history, to know our math, and this is the way that we do it. So tell me about how that works with your organization.
So what we try for about 30% of the population in school, reading is the most difficult thing that they will ever learn to do, and they need one-on-one instruction. But in the current climate, teacher assistants have been cut left and right in the school system, so there's not as much time for teachers to give that individualized or small group instruction to their students. So what we do, our primary outreach at Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center is the Augustine Literacy Project. We
right.
bring in volunteers, we train them in this very systematic, structured way of teaching reading, and they are phenomenal, such caring adults, and we pair them up with a student who comes from a low-income family, and who is at least a year behind in reading. Okay. So because the tutoring that is very effective for struggling readers, the going rate in the county for this multisensory structured reading approach is about $40 an hour. Well, that's out of reach for most families.
Right.
And so we want to try to level the playing field for those students who need the reading instruction by training these volunteers who go in twice a week and work with them. Except in COVID days, what they're doing is tutoring on Zoom. So we have these incredible volunteers who not only have taken a week-long training to learn how to teach children how to read, but who are now tutoring on Zoom. And so they've learned this new technology, and it's going great.
Well, if it's only a week long, that's a big change from the last time that I've talked to anybody who was with, because that used to be a lot more extensive, if I'm not mistaken, the training for the Augustine, help me with the name of the...
Augustine Literacy Project. It used to be two weeks long.
Oh, really? Okay.
But what we decided is we were teaching, making people drink from a fire hose, right? That we were giving them all this information that they couldn't use immediately. And so what we do now is we train them for a week. We give them the skills that they're going to need for the most part for their children within 1, maybe 2 years, depending on how quickly the child progresses, and then we bring them back in for additional training. Every month we have what we call tutor enrichment, and so we are making sure that our tutors development for volunteers.
More First Talk right after this commercial break. We'll be right back.
Local information for the greater Hickory Metro. It's First Talk with Hal Rowe.
Good morning. Welcome back to First Talk with Hal Rowe on WHKY Talk Radio. For the Greater Hickory Metro, we're talking with Angela Lawrence this morning. Angela Lawrence, she is the Executive Director of the Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center. We're also talking with Reba Walton, who is a retired educator and helps with professional development, or in this case, volunteer development, helps teachers and volunteers learn how to teach those maybe who have learning differences. So do you work with the volunteers, Ms. Walden, or do you work mostly with educators in the area?
I work mostly with the educators in the area, but I do help with volunteers, but yes, mostly mine's with the teachers in the classroom, yes.
Now, help me. There's a couple names here that I want to get right. Help me with the name of the way that you want to see or you assist teachers teach in the classroom. What's that called?
Orton-Gillingham Approach.
The Orton-Gillingham Approach. Now, tell me about that.
Okay, this has been around for like over 70 years.
Okay.
But Samuel Orton was the doctor, Anna Gillingham was the educator or speech path, and they came together to discover the best ways to teach children who struggle even back then. So there was a lot of misconceptions that he figured out, and the approach that we now use was developed with their expertise from a long time ago.
Now, do you mostly work with educators? My little sister is in special education in the state of Florida. Do you mostly work with folks who are in special ed? Do you work with teachers' assistants? Because we heard earlier from Ms. Lawrence about the fact that a lot of the teachers' assistants are no longer there. The amount of time that it takes some time. It would be wonderful if we lived in a world where we're all able to sit down one-on-one with a child and help them to learn to read. Tell me about the classroom situation now and the way that you become involved with that and the way that you help educators with their professional development.
Well, what we're trying to do now is to teach the general education teacher so that we know that they reach more children, and this approach is good for all children.
Now, is this in the younger ages? This is kindergarten, Smart Start, this is first
kindergarten grade? Through second grade is our target approach, but it can help any and all children who struggle. But if we get them on the right path and everyone is taught in this, we call it now structured literacy, but it's based on the Orton-Gillingham principles, but we teach them a very systematic, sequential way, the whole class, then you don't have as many children that maybe don't reach or aren't successful. So you can manage the children that are needed, but if you have like over half of your class who are struggling, then we know that we need to change the approach that a classroom teacher may be using in the classroom.
Is this something that classroom teachers welcome, that they want to have, that they are saying, please bring more of this into our classrooms? Or some of them saying, I'm not so sure. Tell me a little bit about it. And we'll get into this in just a very small way, because I don't want to talk about big policy and things like this and school boards. I don't want to get too much into that. But are the teachers, the educators, those with boots on the ground, are they the ones who are looking at the Orton-Gillingham approach, structured literacy, and saying this will be helpful or this is helpful for us?
Well, I think all teachers want to do the most they can for all students, but I think a lot of them realize that maybe they weren't equipped with the skills that they need to teach the children. So they are looking or wanting more information or more tools so that they can help all children be successful. So I do think we've worked with the teachers we've worked with have all been willing and able to open to learn the approach that would be successful for all children.
And Hal, that's where our agency comes in. Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center. I work with Reba and Dawn Newberry, another Orton-Gillingham trainer out of Charlotte. Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center pays for 18 teachers a summer to get this training.
Okay. And that was going to be my next question.
Because we really believe that all students can benefit from this. And, you know, I'm never going to train enough volunteers to reach every student who struggles in reading in Catawba County. So if we can train K-2 teachers, that those K-2 teachers can then recognize, oh, wait a minute, this child is showing some signs of dyslexia. Let me put them in this small group. Let me help them with this. That they're going to be more successful. And we believe so strongly in early intervention, because
we talked about that a little bit before, but I'm glad you're bringing this up.
If a child has a reading gap in kindergarten, they might need 30 minutes of intervention to get them back on the right track, to get them proficient. If a child has a gap in fourth grade, it may take 3 to 4 hours of structured literacy instruction to get them back to where they need to be. So we believe intervene early, get them the skills that they need then.
Okay, good. This brings up one of the main reasons that I wanted to have you all in today to talk a little bit about this. So we've got teachers in the classroom who are learning structured literacy. It's easy for me to say that than the Orton-Gillingham.
Exactly.
So structured literacy. So maybe they don't have the time or the ability to be able to instruct as they would like to. But because they maybe had this training, they're able to key in on it, and they're able to say, okay, this is a child who has a learning difference. I can recognize it now. They're not doing what we would normally see in the approach with structured literacy. So we may have a child who has learning differences. Kids are at home now, especially a lot of kids in that area where we're sending packets home. They may not even be doing distance learning. They're not in touch with an instructor, either via screen or one-on-one. So what do parents who have zero training in education, and especially they probably, like me, have a difficulty pronouncing Orton-Gillingham, you know, we don't know what's going on there. What are some things this morning that parents who may be listening, or grandparents who may be listening, we talked about a little bit of disconnect, but in a very real way, as those packets come home, do we look for some of the things that we may be more familiar with, reversing letters? Do we maybe look for, you know, we talk about children who don't like reading. Let's face it, some kids would much rather be on the screen, be watching TV, then they would be reading. That's just a choice. It's easier. You know, it's a lot easier for me to eat Oreos than it is broccoli. I'm going to do that. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that parents could take a look at immediately as they're trying to help their students, very specifically, if we could, about what to look for and how we could maybe help with that learning gap at those very young ages. And I'll hand it to you, Ms. Walden.
Well, always reading to children is important, even for them to listen, like you said, to learn vocabulary and to hear. So I would say reading books to children is always a good thing to do.
Okay.
But for the children to actually learn to read themselves, that's when we need to start talking about the letters of the alphabet and
okay.
the sounds that the letters make. So that could be an issue if parents struggle with that process.
Sure.
So maybe using some... If they don't have computers, the software might be difficult. But starting with their names, talking about the letters of the names in their name and learning the sounds that the letters make, or starting with some simple, like five consonants and one vowel, and making words with just a few letters and one vowel, if we're starting talking about beginning readers.
Right. So these are some of the things that we can do. Tell me about some of the signs that I'm going to see as a parent that might make me say, okay, we have some learning differences here.
Well, I think one of the most...
Because that's tough.
Right. One of
we
the most
spend a couple days talking about this.
Right. One of the most important things that parents need to remember is their child, they should never quit listening to their child read.
Okay.
So have their child read out loud to them. Notice if they're substituting words that mean the same thing for the actual words in the story, because it may be instead of actually reading that word, they're picking up a picture clue and they're substituting that word in, but they actually cannot decode the word that's on the page.
But they know what that word, they may have a different definition for that word. Bright. I mean, that I look at that and I say, that's a bright child. But that's also a signal or a key to say, wait a minute, maybe we have a learning difference.
Right.
They're not reading that word. They understand the concept. They get it. But they're not reading the exact word here. That's what we want to try to get them to do.
So sometimes having them read text without pictures is very revealing.
Okay.
Single word lists where they can't figure out the context. You know, just having and there's resources online that, you know, of words that they should be able to read,
okay.
but if it's given to them without any context, then they may struggle, and that's when you may see.
There we go. Okay, that's what we're looking for. Good. Okay.
Another thing that I think can be helpful, particularly dyslexia, it knows no boundaries as far as intelligence's levels. So
right.
it's present in all ranges of intelligences. So, but our very bright dyslexics, they can kind of scoot under the radar for a while because they memorize things so well. So then, if that's the case, again, reading without pictures, reading single text, but also sometimes throwing in what we call educationally nonsense words in there to see if they can decode that. For instance, L-A-T. A child should decode that as lat. Lat. Okay, that word doesn't make any sense. That's not a word that they would have memorized
right.
and been taught. But it's the basis of words like latitude and lateral, and they might get into trouble in science if they can't read those words.
More First Talk Radio. I'm Hal Roa. First Talk, my phone and my phone service come to me through Carolina West Wireless. There is so much that's going on with Carolina West Wireless that you need to know about. There's no way we can tell you about it in 60 seconds. So I'd like you to stop by Highway 70, Startown Plaza. Go by and talk to them today. What are you looking for? Are you looking for a new phone? Talk to them about what you need in a phone. They're not there to toe the company line and to put a phone in your pocket or in your purse that you don't want. They want to try to discover what you want and what you need. So that's what Carolina West Wireless does that's different from a lot of the big providers. How about a plan? How about a program? They're not there with something that is going to be a cookie-cutter plan for you that is going to make you fit their plan. They're going to talk to you about exactly what you want and what you need, and they're going to do the best to provide that for you. That's what it's really all about. That's being successful. And don't forget, they're a local company. Your money stays right here in North Carolina. Can you believe that? That never happens at the big box stores. Located Highway 70, Startown Plaza. Stop by today. Carolina West Wireless. Go stay connected. I want to thank our guests who have joined us this morning. So wonderful to know that we have these folks We're working for the betterment of education for our children and our families in the area. Joining us this morning is Angela Lawrence. She's the executive director of the Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center. Also joining us this morning is Reba Walden, retired educator, who helps students, who helps educators learn how to help students learn in a new, different, better way, and to be able to help them understand these concepts of structured literacy so that they can go on to learn more advanced disciplines through the written word. I do want to say, because we were talking about it during the break, and I don't want to, you know, my dad's no longer with us, so I don't want to throw the guy under the bus because he was a great dad, only one of the very best for me. That was his whole thing. But it was a consistent try harder. If you would just try harder, you could be an A student. If you would just try harder, and that try hard, and I was really, I think at one point, giving it the best I had. And then after a while, I was just like, okay, this is not working out. This is not working out for me. But that's one of the reasons that they did the testing and got me involved with the education and became the cheerleaders for me. Who wanted to see me do my very best. So it's sometimes I know that parents want to cheer on their children and they want to say try harder, do better, but sometimes children may need an additional bit of help in a different way, and that's what the Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center can get us. So let's talk a little bit about that, Angela Lawrence, because that's one of the things that you wanted to talk about before we left. You said, tell that story on the air. But right. because they did get me the help, and I was tested, and I was able to do better academically, because some people will say, well, if you're dyslexic, you're probably not going to learn to play a musical instrument. I can. I can play guitar. As to how well, you'll have to ask somebody else. You're probably not going to go to college. I went to college. Still working on that graduation part. Still working on that. So taking a little sabbatical. But these are things that I was able to do because my parents helped me and became a cheerleader for me. I did not want, we know that so many people who are in prison or incarcerated have reading differences or reading difficulties. So you tell me, I'm going to be quiet here because I could talk about this all day, but the importance of parents getting behind and becoming cheerleaders for their children and advocating for them.
Right. Every child needs an advocate. Every child needs someone who stands behind them and believes that they can achieve. And really, I never knew. I used to be an educator also. I never knew that just saying try harder to a student who was actually trying the hardest that they could be so discouraging. But what we need, one of the things that I am really passionate about is what the research shows is that really, when it comes down to it, there should only be about 5% of people who absolutely cannot read, and that's because of some kind of cognitive impairment, maybe drugs and pregnancy, something that impacted the students. But right now, in Catawba County, we only have 40% of students, 4 in 10 third graders, can't read proficiently by third grade. And what happens, as I said earlier, those gaps just keep getting bigger.
Right.
And
give me those numbers again. 4 in 10 third graders are not where they need to be.
Right, 4 in 10 third, and this is I'm not picking on any school system.
Right.
This number's been consistent, and it's across all three school systems, and in fact, nationally, it's consistent too. 4 in 10 third graders don't read on grade level, and what happens then, and what when you look at the ACT in their junior year in high school, only about 32% of our students meet the college readiness benchmark in reading.
Wow.
And that makes me very sad, because we want them to be able to go and to college if they choose to.
Right.
I mean, there's many pathways to success. College is not the only one, but we don't want that option to be off the table.
Or to
for
be
them.
Able to read an instruction manual.
Right.
Or
right.
to be able to read corporate dictates or rules and regulations. I mean, and maybe it more advanced disciplines within a company that might not be
right,
academia.
The economic consequences of poor literacy are huge. There's some number out there that I can't pull off, but it's in the billions of how much poor literacy costs costs the nation. And
let me ask if I could, Ms. Walden, give me some ideas of good resources, because you want us to go to a good resource. Don't go to these fly-by-nights or this is a quick fix. There is no quick fix. Tell us about good resources.
Yes, there is no quick fix. There's no rose-colored glasses or lenses. You do need to use a reputable resource, which is the International Dyslexia Association. They have lots of resources for educators and for parents, anyone who's interested. So I encourage you to go to that resource to make sure that you're not wasting time or money on things that are not reputable. So please check out the International Dyslexia Association website.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for having us today.
You're more than welcome. And I wanted to make sure that we got that in. I kind of interrupted you. Forgive me there.
Yes.
But you were talking before we went about the numbers that were where we were in schools and the billions of dollars that it cost by poor reading. We talked about people who are incarcerated who don't have the reading skills, who had they been able to have those reading skills may not be. But there's also a lot of people who are on your side and advocating for you. And I know that you wanted to mention them before we wrapped up this
morning. Yes. If you have donated to Patrick Beaver Learning Resource Center, we've got a lot of individuals who donate to us, and we just want to thank you for that. If you donate to United Way, we are proud to be an agency that's partnering with them. They support the Augustine Literacy Project. Catawba Valley Community Foundation supports Augustine Literacy Project and a number of individual family foundations. So we thank you so much, and we just, if you want to volunteer, we don't have any training scheduled now because COVID.
Sure.
But we would love for you to get in touch with us at info@patrickbeaverlrc.org, and we'll be glad to sign you up for the next training so that you can have this great impact in a student's life and help them learn to read.
info@patrickbeaverlrc.org. And you said, I'm sorry, I didn't catch. You want to just the web address?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I want to thank again both of you all very much for coming in. I know I took up way too much of your time this morning because it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I truly believe that with the education and with the advocacy and with all the pieces in place, students can come on can come to a knowledge, an understanding, a self-awareness of their value, of their intelligence, of the fact that they can win and they can be somebody in this world. And I want every child to feel that way. I want the children to feel really good about who they are and what they can do. They may have some differences, but they may excel in other areas that no one could ever imagine. And they can be leaders. They can be wonderful team members and just have a wonderful life. So thank you very much. God bless you for the work that you're doing for these folks who have these learning differences.
Thank you.
Go ahead and close the way we normally do with our national anthem. Thanks so much for joining us on First Talk. We know you have a choice in morning radio. That's why we appreciate you choosing the First Talk radio program. Tomorrow morning, we are going to explore our county connection. We'll find out a little bit about the flu shots. We'll get hip to Hickory and hear from Carolina Caring, who just had a wonderful golf tournament yesterday. More First Talk tomorrow. Be grateful for what you got. Make it a great day.